This morning, as you can see, we are starting a new series called We Can't Stay Here. A lot of you are like, yes, thank you, absolutely. And some of you are like, but why? Why can't we stay here? Well, and the whole premise of this series is that there are things in our lives that tend to keep us from truly following Jesus to its fullness, that keep us from moving forward, that keep us from taking our next steps in our faith, that keep us from taking our next steps in what God would have for us, what God is calling us to do, His purpose for our lives. And we all want to know, why are we here on this earth? What is our purpose? But there are things that we have allowed to take root in our lives that keep us from truly discovering what that is. And most of the time, we think of it as the things like the big things like, lust, greed, anger, malice, unforgiveness, and all those things play their part, definitely. But what this series is addressing are the subtleties that take root in our life that we don't even always know that we've allowed to let them take root, that we don't even always know that we've become or we've gotten stuck in a rut, that that things are going on that are keeping us from moving forward that we don't even really recognize. And so this series, we're going to be looking at three of them in particular. The one we'll be talking about today will be complacency, right? Everybody loves talking about being complacent. Another one next week, we'll be talking about our comfort and sometimes how we get too comfortable with things and we don't move anywhere. And then the last one, the third one, will be our tendency to be consumeristic, right? We like us. We like doing things that we want. We like consuming, and how that truly affects our walk with Jesus and how it affects us being able to move forward. And I have a very, I'll be honest with you, I have a very specific hope and a prayer for this series for myself. So I include myself in this, but also for you. I would love for nothing else in this series than for God to completely disrupt your life. That He just starts digging up all sorts of stuff and just starts messing with everything. Like, I want Him to do that in my life. I want Him to just disrupt things, just start messing with stuff. Bring me to a point where I have to be like, wow, I can't stay here. I can't just keep doing what I've always done. I've got to move forward. I've got to move forward in what He's calling me to do. I've got to move forward in this. I've got to move forward in that. I've got to keep going. I can't just stay in the same place doing the same thing as I've always done because it's not working anymore. And He's disrupted my life, and He's shown me, and I've discovered that He's calling me towards something, that He's moving me towards something, and I want to discover what that is. And so that's the whole premise of this series. And this morning, as we talk about complacency, like, this series is designed for movement. You're going to hear that word a lot, but this whole series is designed for movement, to go from A to B, right? Because if we can't stay here, where are we going? And that's the whole idea. And so each week, we're going to talk about, like I said, one idea and what we're going to move towards to keep us moving forward. And so this morning, we're going to be talking about moving from complacency to courage. And now you might think, well, why courage? Well, because complacency is the attitude that says, you know what, nah, I'm good. Or, that's not really my problem. I'm over here. They're over there. That's their thing. I'm gonna do me. I'm gonna get mine. I'm good. But courage says, no, I see something, I'm gonna do something. I see something, I'm gonna do something. And this morning we're gonna be reading out of the book of Nehemiah. So if you have your Bibles, open up to Nehemiah 1. If not, no worries, it'll be on the screen per usual. But to give you a little historical context of what's going on in the book of Nehemiah, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah are some of my favorite Old Testament books because I just love the story. I've told you before, I'm a history buff, and this is a historical account of Israel in the Babylonian exile. And at this point, Nehemiah is a cupbearer to the Persian king Artaxerxes. It's quite the name. And this is about 444 BC. The city of Jerusalem has been lying in ruins for about 140 years. Israel has no real home. They are not a nation. They are in the Babylonian captivity. And so they don't really have anything to call their own. They're just at the whims of the Babylonian Empire. And like I said, Nehemiah is a cupbearer to the king, and I'll explain in a little bit what a cupbearer did. But at a certain point, a small remnant of Israelites are allowed to go back into Jerusalem. And this is the first time they're really being able to take back their capital city, their main place to be as a nation. They haven't had this for a long time. The king allows them to go back, and then Nehemiah follows up with them. And this is Nehemiah starting in chapter 1, verse 1. It says, "The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa Hanani, which would be modern-day Iran, one of my brothers came from Judah with some other men, and I questioned them about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exile and also about Jerusalem. They said to me, 'Those who survived the exile are back in the province, are in great trouble and in disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire.'" Verse 4, "When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." Your first feeling, your first requirement for moving from complacency to courage, not your first feeling, it's your second one, is that we have to have a soft heart. You have to have a soft heart. Now, Nehemiah talks to this person. He says, "Hey, how's everything going in Jerusalem? Tell me about the exiles." And the guy's like, "Listen, it's not great. We're back. We survived the exile. We're back in Jerusalem, but we're just being harassed all the time. We have no fortification. We have no wall. Therefore, we're just subject to brigands and bandits and foreign invaders. Like, we're just constantly being harassed, abused, and we're just in disgrace because we have nothing of our own." And this is a problem. And Nehemiah knows it's a problem. And the fact that his brothers and his fellow Israelites are in distress and disgrace breaks his heart. And he begins to weep over them. He weeps. He has a soft heart for his brothers and sisters. He has a soft heart for the nation of Israel. He doesn't just say, "Oh, man, that's a bummer. Good thing I'm 1,000 miles away in my cushy palace job." Right? I mean, Nehemiah was a cupbearer. He took wine to the king, and he got to drink it before the king. You might be thinking, if you like wine, ooh, my job, yes, please. The problem was he got to drink the wine before the king because he was testing the wine for poison. Nehemiah was laying his life on the line every day for a cup of wine. And that was his job. And so when he hears about what's going on in Jerusalem, he doesn't think, "Well, I've got this cushy job, albeit dangerous, but I get to live in the palace, and I'm going to do me. I'm going to stay right here." He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, "Oh, well, that's you guys in Jerusalem over there. We've got our own problems here and in this place. Like, I mean, could you believe? I mean, we've got bed bugs and the palace mattresses. It's this whole thing." No. His heart breaks for them, and he begins to weep on their behalf. And he has the same posture when he thinks about Jerusalem that Jesus does when he first shows up in Jerusalem. In Luke 19, this isn't in your notes, but I'm just going to read it to you. Verse 41 and 42 says, "As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, 'If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes.'" You see, Nehemiah and Jesus are both moved to tears because of the state of those that they care about. I mean, Nehemiah is weeping over the disgrace that Israel feels for not having Jerusalem. Jesus is weeping over Jerusalem because the people are lost. And it's a really simple question here. When we talk about moving from complacency to having courage, because the courage of a soft heart, courage asks us to care about things. We've got to care about things. And there are lots of things we could cry about. There are lots of things that we could say we care about. But the question is are you crying about the same things that God is? Right? Do you have a soft heart for the same things that God has a soft heart for? Does your heart break for the same things that God's heart breaks for? Do you celebrate the things that God celebrates? It reminds me of Luke 15 and the parables of the lost coin or the lost sheep. When Jesus is talking about what was lost is found, and there's so much emphasis in these parables about celebration and rejoicing for what was lost is now being found. And so we can say we weep for those who are lost, and our hearts should break. But what I'm saying is a soft heart is being sensitive to what matters to God, and people matter to God. Is your heart, are you and God crying about the same thing? Let's keep reading. Verse 5. It says, then I said, this is Nehemiah, he's praying. He says, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself and my father's family, have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly toward you. We have not obeyed the commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. Remember the instruction you gave your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even your exiled people who are at the farthest horizon, will gather them from there and bring them to the place I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. They are your servants and your people whom you redeemed by your great strength and your mighty hand. Here's a second thing. Here's a second requirement that we need to have to move from complacency to courage, and that's a prayerful heart. A prayerful heart. The first one is a soft heart because courage asks us to care. The second one is a prayerful heart because courage asks us to surrender, which might sound a little counterintuitive at first. Courage means surrender? Yes. And what we're talking about in dealing with complacency, when we're trying to move out of complacency, we've got to be willing to surrender. We've got to be willing to pray. Our hearts, so let's take for example, our heart's just been broken for something. God has moved in our spirits on the behalf of somebody, on some situation. Now our posture is to pray, just like Nehemiah did. So what does Nehemiah do? After he just got done crying, like the ugly crying, like this is like, if you wear makeup, this is like the crying that makes you look like the Joker. This is the crying that's like the snot is running down, like you're heaving because you can't hardly breathe kind of crying. That's the kind of weeping that Nehemiah is doing. And so once he can collect himself, once he gets to that point where he can actually formulate some sentences, he begins to pray. Because he knows his heart has just been stirred by the Spirit of the Lord to care about his nation. That something isn't sitting right with him, and he knows that he's not going to just sit idle about it. But before he does, he's got to identify a couple things. He's got to identify God's goodness. He's got to identify where he's messed up, where his people have messed up. And he's got to identify that whatever he does next, he's going to need the Lord's favor. That's a great posture to be in because he gives us a little Reader's Digest version of what happened to Israel, why they're in Babylonian captivity. They messed up. And God constantly told them, listen, I will stay with you. But if you continue to turn your back on me, if you continue to reject me, you're going to go into exile. You know, that's the whole passage of Jeremiah 29:11, the one that we love to write notes to people to. I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans not to harm you, but to prosper you. He's in the middle of judgment saying, listen, you guys have messed up and you're going into exile. But I want to remind you, I have good plans for you. But you're going into exile now. Because you guys didn't hold up your end of the deal. But the same part of that promise is that, but if you return to me, I will reestablish you. And so Nehemiah is saying, listen, God, I've messed up. Israel's messed up. We've done some stuff. But remember your promise to restore us if we turn back to you. And he says, and I'm going to need your favor because I'm about to do something. Courage asks us to surrender. Nehemiah is surrendering control because that's what complacency is. Complacency is control. That, nah, I'm good is because you don't want to do anything that you may not have total control over. The they're over there and I'm here is control because you don't want to quite step out and maybe put yourself in a situation you're not totally in control. But when we come with a soft heart and a prayerful heart and we surrender that control, now we're saying, God, you've stirred me, now use me. I'm ready and I'm going to need your favor. I'm identifying that I need you and I'm going to need you to take control. You know, and I know all sorts of people will say, but I'm only one person, or we're just one family, or we're just one church, whatever lame excuse you can come up with not to do something. But when we spend time in prayer, when we surrender control, it's not about things getting done right then and there. It's about acknowledging that God is the one who is capable of turning any situation into a life-giving circumstance. Where there's pain and hardship, God can bring peace and love. When there is difficulty, God can bring comfort. And it's understanding that we have to get outside of ourselves so that we can truly interact and act on behalf of other people, the people that our hearts have stirred for. And so that's what Nehemiah does. Even in the context of big needs, God is always our bigger resource. And some of the most important time we'll ever spend is time in prayer, specifically on the behalf of other people. You know, if you want to move from complacency to courage with prayer, you've got to be ready to surrender control. Are you ready to surrender control? Are you ready to surrender the control of the circumstances that you're walking through to the Lord? And sometimes the most courageous thing we could do is ask for help. Let's keep reading. Let's see what Nehemiah does. This is chapter 2, starting in verse 1. It says, in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city of Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. Your third requirement to go from complacency to courage is a resolved heart. Soft heart, a prayerful heart, and a resolved heart. Because courage asks us to do something. Courage asks us to care. Courage asks us to surrender. And courage asks us to do something. So we have Nehemiah, and he's doing his cupbearer duties, and he's just finished this time of weeping and fasting and praying, so he probably looks like a mess. And so as he's doing his cupbearer duties, the king takes notice. He's like, what's going on? You're not usually like this. Why are you sad? And you're not sick, so don't try and play me. And it says Nehemiah was afraid. Why was he afraid? Because the king totally could have had him killed just for harshing his vibe, right? just for bumming out the king, Nehemiah could have been killed. For throwing off the king's groove, he could have been thrown out the window, right? So that's why Nehemiah is afraid. But he steps out in courage. He says, okay, I've fasted, I've prayed, I trust that the Lord has his favor because he has stirred this in my heart. And the king says, what is it that you want? Nehemiah says, I want to go home and I want to rebuild it. Man, that's incredible. Because Nehemiah doesn't just sit there in a distance and be like, well, I prayed for you guys. So we're good, right? I mean, I prayed and I meant my prayer. So we're good. No, Nehemiah says, I'm going to rebuild it. I'm going to go there and I'm going to do this. Now, keep in mind, Israel's been in exile for quite some time. It's likely that Nehemiah was born in Babylonian captivity. He has known nothing else but Babylon. And his cupbearer duties, he's known nothing else but that. He's not an engineer. He's not a stonemason. He may not know a single thing about rebuilding a wall that fortifies an entire city. But that doesn't matter. What he does know is that the Lord has done something in his heart on behalf of his fellow Israelites, and that he has the Lord's favor, and that now he has to do something about it. He can't be complacent anymore. He's not going to send other people. He's not going to whine about it. He's not going to go sit around and complain. Why won't somebody do something about this? Why? Because he knows it is his burden. The God of heaven has given this to him. And he knows that as long as he has breath in his lungs, this is what he's going to do. And that he's not going to be okay with his Israelites being harassed and disgraced. He's going to say, not on my watch. I'm going to do something. Here's the big idea for this morning. And it's to model Nehemiah's heart. And it's this right here. I am the solution to the problem I see. I am the solution to the problem I see. I mean, too often times, we're really good as people at pointing out problems, right? You can point out all sorts of problems with the current political climate. You can point out all sorts of problems in the current administration, past administrations, whatever administration you don't support. You can find all sorts of problems. You can find all sorts of problems in the public school systems, in your workplace. You can find all sorts of problems wherever we look. We're really good at identifying problems. But courage is the one that says, I see a problem. I'm going to be part of the solution. I'm going to do something about it. Because identifying the problem isn't movement. That's just identifying a problem. That's just complacency. Oh, there's a problem over there, but that's over there. That's their fault. They deal with it. So the question is, are you ready to do something? Are you ready to be solutions to the problems you see? And we might all see different problems. That's the beauty of it, is that God will stir up in us, in each one of us individually, as a church, as a couple, whatever the scenario, different things for us to identify and say, oh, that's something I've got to do something about. And he's going to break our hearts for something. And when I say break our hearts, I don't necessarily just mean pain. I mean, we're going to have a new sensitivity towards things that truly matter. Because I'll be honest with you guys. I'm going to take a brief moment right here. I'll be honest. I'm really tired of cultural Christianity that doesn't bring transformation to anybody's life. I'm really tired of it. I'm really tired of so much of my faith being defined by what I can't say, what I can wear, what I can't wear, what I can listen to, what I can't listen to. All these rules that have absolutely nothing to do with the gospel all while there are homeless, there are destitute, there are disenfranchised who are lost, who aren't hearing the gospel because I'm too worried about what I'm supposed to wear on a Sunday morning as a pastor. Like, I'm just so tired of it. And I want to weep for people the way Jesus did because he knew that they were lost and he loved them deeply. That's what I want my faith to be about. I want to live my life so that the gospel, that, you know, we talk about John 3:16, that for God so loved the whole world. The whole world. Doesn't matter what race, doesn't matter what color, it doesn't matter what sexual preference. Jesus loves them, and Jesus came for them. And I can't sit idly by while people are dying in loneliness and destitution, disenfranchised, and say, I'm a follower of Jesus. It doesn't line up. That's complacency. And that's why we can't stay here. Because if you are going to be a follower of Jesus, you have to care. You have to pray. You have to surrender. And you have to do something. I have to do something. And you might say, but there are so many problems in the world. Yes, there are. But we can start with us. We can start in our own families. We cannot be complacent in our marriages. We cannot be complacent with our debt. We cannot be complacent with where just family dynamics are. Well, it is what it is. This is how we grew up. I've always been in debt. By the look of my mortgage and my credit card bill, I'm always going to be in debt, so why worry about it? That's complacency. You were meant for so much more. God is calling you to so much more. And this series is about digging up that stuff and saying, you know what? I've become complacent here, and I'm not going to do that anymore. I see a problem, I'm going to be the solution. Because God is calling me as a follower of Jesus to something greater on his behalf as his ambassador to care for people. I mean, that's why we're going to talk about them in a couple weeks, but we have these three values right outside this door. And the first one says, Jesus surprised the world, so we will too. We will be known by what we are for. By what we're against, by what we're for. And we're for the lost. We're for the disenfranchised. That's why we partner with organizations like James Storehouse and the foster care community, because we're for those kids. The second value is that Jesus was all about people, so we are too. Everything Jesus did, he ate with them, he laughed with them, he prayed with them, he spent time with them. That's what we're about as a church. We're going to be intentionally present in all of our relationships. And the third value was that Jesus gave big, and so we will too. We will use whatever resources we have to bring the gospel to the people around us. Whether it's this place, this facility, whether it's finances, whether it's our time, whether it's our talents, whatever it is, God has given us resources. And it is our job to do something with them. And we're going to keep talking about that. And you're going to hear about this throughout the rest of the series. And it's going to culminate at the end of this month. And Pastor Justin's going to give you some real vision and direction for 2020 as Gateway Church. Because Gateway exists to do these very things. Gateway exists to help people take their next steps towards Jesus. Whether it's their first step, whether it's just their next step. It doesn't matter. We're here to help them. This is not Gateway Church. This is a launch point for you to be Gateway Church out there, for you to care, for you to surrender, for you to do something. This is a time for us to come together, get refreshed, get direction, and get ready to go out Monday through Saturday. That's why Gateway is here. This building, as beautiful as this sanctuary is now, from all the hard work from Pastor Sarah and our contractors, if this ceased to exist, Gateway would not. We'd still be here, and we'd still have a call to not sit on our duffs and not do nothing. We're being called to step out of complacency and into courage, to care, to surrender, to have soft hearts, to have prayerful hearts, to be sensitive, to celebrate with what God celebrates, to mourn with what God mourns, to identify and be ready to do what it is, whatever it is that God stirs up in our lives, and to have the courage to say, I'm terrified, but Jesus, I know you're with me. And so I'm going to step out and I'm going to believe that through me, you're going to do something in somebody's life. And somebody is going to have their life transformed because Gateway Church was responsive to the Spirit of God. Amen. That's why we can't stay here. We're not designed to stay here. Complacency will kill us. And it won't do any favors for anybody out here, out there either. So the question is, are you ready to do something? Are you ready to be the solution to the problem you see? Are you ready to step out in faith and courage and sensitivity to what God has for you? Are you ready? Because he's calling you, each and every one of you. He's got something specific for you. Whether you've never talked to him or not, whether you've been far from God or not, today is the first day. And you can hear from him, and you can respond to him, and you can find out just exactly what it is that he wants you to be sensitive to and wants you to care about so that you can actually do something. Let's pray.